Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
It means throwing my sewing machine in the back of our really beat up car and driving in the middle of the night into Paris to like kind of load things into the studio because it's just too much traffic during the day and the parking expensive. So I do, after the kids go to bed, sometimes we'll drive back and forth between the two, which is a bit crazy, but I'm lucky that I can do it.
I'm so pleased to share information about our sponsor for this episode, Globe In. Globe In is a monthly subscription of fair trade goods from all around the world. They provide beautiful, inspiring artisan boxes that are shipped right to your door. And these actually contain a curated collection of handmade items for your home. These items can include everything from Moroccan ceramics to hand-woven Mexican baskets, tea, coffee, or other little food items and goodies. I loved the cozy box that I got. It had a gorgeous hand-painted mug, and my kids and I shared some hot chocolate. It was just such a great treat. So you can actually take $20 off your first box for any 3-month subscription, which is 50% off your first box, using promo code ARTISTMOTHER, all caps, ARTISTMOTHER. So the special thing about this company, Globe In, is that every purchase supports artisans in remote communities. Globe In is a verified member of the Fair Trade Federation, which means they pay artisans a reliable wage which covers all their basic needs. Every product is connected to powerful stories of the artisans who created them, and you can read all about these stories in a little booklet that comes with your box every month. It was a lot of fun to read through that with my kids. Every month, Globe In has 4 to 5 brand new box themes that you choose as your monthly selection. They also make available any of their previous bestsellers, or you can actually be surprised. You can select that option where they send whatever they choose for you, and it's kind of fun to see what you get. Everything is good, so it doesn't really matter. You also have the option of customizing your subscription box. You can select redeem and put your box credit towards individual fair trade goods that are on sale in the monthly add-on section. Every month, Globe In also has an artisan fund where they raise money for one of the artisan groups they partner with for programs they request, like education or different building projects. Globe In has a really active community of like-minded women on Facebook. You can go find this group called Mavens Community, which has over 10,000 members. Certainly, you can find someone you can connect with and talk about shopping ethically there. Globe In is a monthly subscription box which costs $40 a month. However, you can pay in advance for the year and it can come down to $33 a month. And don't forget, you can use the coupon ARTISTMOTHER, all caps, for $20 off your first box. You can skip a box or cancel anytime. So check out globein.com, GLOBEIN.com, to see this incredible company who are supporting artisan workers all across the globe. Their products are inspiring, beautiful, and, best part, ethical. Thank you to Globe In for sponsoring this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. Michelle Landell is an artist mother to 3 kiddos living in Paris, France. She creates intensely textured and airy collages using burned, quilted, and embroidered photographs and paper to explore the themes of exposure, absence, and memory. She holds degrees in fine arts and art history, and her work has been exhibited in France, Italy, Poland, Slovenia, the UK, and the US. Her work also appears in the Collage Ideas book. She was awarded the 2018 Innovative Technique Award by the Surface Design Association and is represented by the Gen Tough Gallery in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Michelle, all the way in France, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Hi, it's really nice to be here.
I'm so happy to have you and have you talk about your work. Oh, I forgot to mention your bio too. You applied to our open call, and I think I already knew about your work and about you a little bit, but it was like such a treat to see you apply to the open call and, you know, pitch yourself for an interview. So thank you so much for doing that.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so let's dive right in and have you tell me a little bit about your life and your career so far as an artist, maybe pointing us back to something, you know, in your childhood or in your earlier years that got you interested in art and some high points along your journey.
Okay, so I was always a super creative kid, always one of the art teacher's favorites, I guess you could say. Mm. But when I went to university, I actually didn't go for a BFA. I went to university and studied art history.
Okay.
But I always loved art, and I took every elective possible I took in the fine arts department. And when I graduated, they actually told me I had a double major because I'd taken so many fine arts classes, but it wasn't a traditional sort of fine arts degree.
Yeah. That's a nice surprise.
It wasn't. I was like, oh, fun. Okay. And so I graduated from university and I got a job and I started working for an architecture firm and doing marketing. And eventually went back and got my master's actually in art history.
This is all in the States, right?
This is all in the US.
Okay.
And then I moved to New York and I worked in an art gallery for a little bit, Exit Art. I interned there, and then I sort of just had to make money. So I started working in marketing and event planning and doing other things, but I was never an artist. I always made art. I always took as many like kind of art classes. I studied all kinds of crazy things from rock carving to glass blowing. So I did it for myself always.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean you never made art, or you said you always made art, but you were never an artist. What do you mean by that?
I never shared it with anyone.
Okay.
It was just for myself. And
but you always had an art practice where you were making something kind of along
yes,
the way.
Yes, but not very deliberate.
Okay.
I wasn't thinking.
Not dedicated.
It was definitely not dedicated. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I would just squeeze in. I would go to a class in the evenings here and there. I would make something at home, but it was not a really dedicated practice. And
okay.
I was definitely not a professional artist. And then about 3 years ago, even maybe a little bit, before that, I had three kids and my youngest was about a year old and I sort of, I hit a wall and I just needed a break. And I started Googling. And for some reason at that time, I had been stitching on paper, again, just for myself, but I'd been hand stitching on paper. And I started Googling and I found this woman, it's a British artist, Val Holmes, who runs these artist retreats in France. And I went to her house and I spent a week with her and she was doing a retreat on sewing on paper.
Mm.
And I was like, it was like, you know, the universe just finds out a lot. You're like,
yes.
I need a break. I start Googling and I find like a retreat on sewing on paper, which is exactly what I was doing. And I was like, oh, perfect. And I actually just called her up and I said, can I come? And she said, yes. And a couple weeks later, I it was just like time wise. And like husband was at home. Like I was like, okay, I've just got to take a break. And I went and I spent a week there and she cooked for me and I just made art for a week. And I came back and I looked at myself and I just did one of those deep assessments. And I was like, you know what? This is what I really need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I always wanted to do. And I wasn't doing it. And I decided then to focus on becoming a professional artist and sort of making it a priority in my life. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. Oh, I can't wait to like break some of that down and hear you talk a little bit more. So were you at the time when this retreat happened and, you know, like you kind of made this big life decision, were you working a different job at that time or were you staying home with your kids or like what was your sort of financial contribution to your family? Because I think that's like a big thing, you know, people like, that's like a big, I don't know, barrier, I guess, to like kind of taking the leap.
So I was doing freelance work. Working for, it's not at all artistic. I was working with French startups and helping them build their marketing communications plans for the US.
Okay.
And yeah, and so
it was already somewhat flexible and maybe less dependable than like a salaried position or something.
Yeah. And I had my third child, and I just, it was tough having three kids.
Yeah.
And
we need to talk about that later too.
I had a hard time with it, and I wasn't really on top of my career, and I started losing a lot of clients around that time as well. Mm. And I sort of was like, I needed a break and I needed to do something else. And so I decided to make that change. Mm,
I love that. I love hearing about like that moment, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So before we kind of go too much further and get down into more details, I want you to talk about what your work looks like in case anybody listening has never seen your work.
It looks like a lot of different things, I guess, but I work with photographs and paper and fabric, and I stitch and burn and quilt these images together. Sometimes they really, for a long time, they were quite small, but one of my challenges of being in France and going toggling between the two countries is I use metric now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like useless anymore. I can't remember feet and inches. They were biggest was like a foot maybe.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting in the last few months, it started to go much, much bigger. Mm. So things that are, I would like a meter. So like a yard, mm-hmm. a meter, much larger. And so that's what I use photographs.
Yeah. So like your base material is kind of a photograph. Is that like kind of where you start? You start with like an image and then you kind of build or decide, make decisions after you sort of have your, your image? Like how, maybe break down your process a little bit. I'm interested to hear like how you make decisions and what you do and what you decide to, do to manipulate the image.
So I have kind of two different things that I do. There's one that often the stuff that I share more, that I sell more, and that I exhibit is I start with a photograph that I either find or I take myself, or it's a combination of the two. And then I digitally manipulate and then I print it out. And it depends. I print them on, like, I'll use this very thin bamboo paper or rice paper that you can almost see through. Mm-hmm. Or lately I've been printing it directly on really these old linen and cotton bed sheets.
Mm. Are you just using like a home printer for this?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'd love to get I've been thinking about getting something bigger, but the truth is that the fabric, it pieces fall off and it gets stuck in the printer and it breaks my printer. So I buy the cheapest printer possible.
Yeah.
I'm brutal to printers because I'm putting these things through that really aren't supposed to go through your printer.
Yeah. So, I've played around with image transfer a little bit. There's this great art book. I'm sure you've heard of it. I think it's just called Image Transfer. I wish I could remember the name of the artist who made it, but, there's so many techniques, but I think, that's just one of the interesting things is like, how are you specifically, getting the image that you have and like what, like, I feel like that's a very specific decision to like print on, something that I already have at home that I can just pop this in and do it. And then, kind of you have your base to start with, right? Like, when thinking about incorporating images into work, I feel like it opens up this whole new door of like problems and, and just like ways to go about obtaining the image and how you're going to incorporate it into whatever material you're using. It's just like this whole new level of things to explore.
Yeah, no, and I've played around a lot with it, but I've had things professionally printed to get larger sizes, but in the end, the lag time frustrates me too much. I tend to just use my little printer at home for now, because I just don't have the patience to wait a month or even a week to get something from the printer.
Right. So you kind of start with an image, and then you're combining some techniques of like stitching on the image, maybe adding other paper to it or canvas or fabric, and you burn it, right? Like, how are you burning things?
So sometimes the paper I burn very slowly with incense sticks. And so I have a really controlled burn that then I can layer. And I like the layering that you see things coming through the image then. And sometimes I burn it so much that it just becomes kind of falls apart, the image itself. It depends on the piece and what I'm trying to do with it. Sometimes they're just tiny holes that I make, and other times it's bigger. And then I don't use a lot of glue. Instead, I then stitch it all together.
So that's one way that you're making larger work, is you're literally stitching, you know, pieces together to build a larger composition.
And I use a sewing machine. So I'm doing what's called free motion embroidery. Which means that the foot's not on, and I have a special quilting quilting foot that I can move around. I move the piece around, and like I get those circles and stuff that you see in quilting, for those who know it.
This might be like my ignorance showing through, but I've played around with collage a little bit, and one of the things that I always find challenging is like the varying textures of materials when you're working with collage, and how, like, you know, you could work with a paper that's a lot thinner and so it might buckle or like warp, but then you have this like paper or something else that's quite thicker, and it's like, how do you, like, your work looks so fluid and delicate, and that's what I don't understand how you're achieving when you're like working with collage and mixing elements, like, or even working with a photograph, you know, and making it look so, like I said, like delicate and fluid, like it feels very cohesive in the way that you're combining these things. I mean, I'm sure I'm just speaking to your skill, but like, could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're saying that.
Is that a challenging thing? Like,
no, I know a lot of collagers that, you know, they spend a lot of time thinking about glues and buckling. And because I don't use glue so much, I don't have that problem of the, you know, I don't have where it doesn't do that, my materials. I'm pinning it all in place with thread, and I like the fact that like I punch holes through things and then I can, because of the technique I use, if there's the hole gets too big, I just cover it up with thread and it disappears. I don't have that sort of traditional worry that collage artists have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And like, I can see how using the stitching and sewing as the medium to combine it would, you know, obliterate some of those issues that like a water or a glue based, medium would maybe make.
Yeah. And I have started using a little bit. I've been making my own glue, rice glue and different kinds of glues to try to kind of put a varnish on things and playing with that. But again, like, I like the fact that it runs and it buckles. It's actually what I think makes it interesting. I like the edges. Like, it, as well, when I work with fabric, I never finish the edges. I like the fact that they just are sort of fraying and coming apart a bit. It's part of the process that I find. It's where I think things get interesting anyway.
Yeah, I think your skill in embracing that is what makes your work, like you said, interesting and really beautiful, because you're like working with sort of those varying textures rather than feeling like you have to control them or something. Tell me about like scaling up. Like, have you had any issues, you know, or any challenges as you've gone from making like smaller work to from 1 foot to like, you know, larger work? Like, I I recently saw you were featured on The Jealous Curator, and which you can talk about that a little bit if you want. But like some of that work that she shared was much bigger. And so I'm just curious to hear how your process has, you know, changed and morphed into making larger work and work that maybe you would consider more installation rather than, you know, just a piece hanging on a wall.
Yeah, I was so excited. It just happened, and it was really just a thrill to be featured on that blog. So I was stumped for a while because one of the problems, I was working with paper almost exclusively, and one of the challenges with paper is when you're trying to sew on it, there's a limit. It's just, if you can picture a sewing machine, the arm that comes over, and then there's the needle that goes down, and there's that space. There's only, and you have to like either fold or roll the paper. And I, once you started going so big, I'd have to either go to like a big industrial sewing machine, and that wasn't really what I wanted to be using. And I was trying to figure this out for a while. And then I had this like brains, like it's one of those where you're like, oh my gosh, that's so obvious. I could just move from paper to fabric. I can scrunch it up, and this problem goes away. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, you don't have the same storage problems as well, as paper is so fragile that you have to kind of keep it just so. Whereas fabric, I can really just roll it or fold it and, you know, travel with it. It's easier to ship. That was my big like, and then I started using now I go and I buy these secondhand like antique French bed sheets from the local like consignment shop, not even consignment, like the equivalent of a Salvation Army here in France. And I love them so much. There's this place I go, and they just have stacks and stacks of these just white sheets. And a used old sheet is such a heavy thing. Mm-hmm. No, like it just like, it has so many connotations. You think of all the people that like slept under it, and like all the, you know, it's probably some grandmother's sheet who's passed away. Right. And all the times it's been washed. And so I started using those, and cause I already find them to be such an interesting object. And then I've been putting now my images onto those sheets. And yeah, they're starting to become much larger and something that's almost like an installation. And it's interesting, it was just like that rectangle of the paper was really kind of holding me back. Even though the sheet is still a rectangle, it's a lot more fluid.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I can see that like in looking through some of, you know, the work like by herself, like how you're kind of draping it and letting the edges kind of fall wherever. It feels more like a sculpture in a way rather than just, you know, the square frame or the rectangle that you would be referencing in a painting or a collage. It's so fun to like see how your work is changing right now and kind of catch you in this moment of like, you know, really pushing yourself. How are you printing on the sheets? Like, is that still, that can't be still through your little printer?
Yeah, it is.
What?
My little printer that just doesn't give up. No, I've gone through, I'm on my second printer because I broke one already.
Okay.
I use freezer paper.
Okay.
You have to Google it. It's this thing, I iron it onto the sheet, and then I can pat this, the paper, the cloth is then stiff enough to pass through the printer.
Right.
There's lots of different techniques for how to make your fabric stiff enough to go through a printer. I was kind of constrained by what I could find here in France.
But even the size of them, like it's just, man, I just admire like all the ways that you are really making, you know, your materials work for you and how you're changing and shaping them. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm working on right now I'm starting a new series that's with kind of exploring portraiture. And I have a large portrait that I'm working on, and I printed it out, and I think it was 25 rectangles to make the whole thing. And then I piece them together, and then I stitch them So I print them each individually out, and then I...
Okay. I can see now in the Who's Afraid, I can see like the kind of how they're like a computer paper piece that you've pieced together, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I can see that. I was like not wrapping my head around how you were even getting these large images.
So there's something quilt-like.
Yeah. No, I love it.
But I'm trying, I deliberately like leave the edges because I'm also trying to like, they're quilt-like, but I'm trying to distance myself as well. I don't want them to look like a quilt.
Yeah.
But there's definitely this idea is there.
Yeah. They're pieced together and you can tell like from certain angles, it's probably more apparent than others for sure. Yeah.
It's funny for me, some things are so, like it's so obvious because I put it together. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have this where you're like, but I know exactly how it's done. That people say things like they don't see it. And I'm like, really? That's so interesting.
Yeah, no, I understand. And like, I think too, just for me, it's not like these types of materials are not stuff I work with. So, you know, when it's like somebody else, I work in paint. So like, I understand how people make paintings, you know, but like collage or like sculpture or something, I'm like, what? Like, how did you do that? I have no idea how you know, it's like you get outside of your own material and you're just like blown away in a different kind of way. yeah. Okay. So Michelle, I want to hear you talk a little bit about your studio too. Like you live in Paris, France. So I would imagine that like, you know, you don't have this large country estate with all these rooms and studio space to work in. So like what, you know, kind of talk to me about like what your studio space is like and, you know, do you live in an apartment? Like, do you, like, how are you kind of managing city life and, you know, your life in France with the need for studio space?
I hate to break your heart, but I actually moved out of Paris.
Did you?
6 years ago. But to be fair, we live in a town just outside, and we often say if Paris was the size of New York or London, we would still be in Paris. We're that close. But we needed more space and we couldn't afford it. So we moved out to the suburbs. And so we have a small house out here. But that said, my boys actually share a bedroom so that I have, I still keep a room for my work, in our house.
So you have a spare bedroom studio, basically.
I have a spare bedroom studio.
Or not a spare bedroom, a needed bedroom, but.
A needed bedroom that I actually, every now and then my son will be, I'm like, do you want your own room? And he's like, no, I'm okay. Actually, he's fine. So it's only a matter of time before one of them is probably not going to be okay, and I'm going to lose that space. But for now, I've been really trying to keep it because I like being able to have a workspace at home. That said, I also do have a small shared studio in Paris.
Okay.
That I've had for about a year. I found it through just an online advertisement and it's really great. It's pretty central. It's easy. It's about a 40-minute commute for me on the train to get there or the metro. And I share it with two other artists and it makes me so happy to get out of the house and go into Paris. And I drop the kids off at school. Then I go in and I work in the morning and I'm by myself and I share it with two really great artists, Daniele and Dario. Mm. And they show up around 1-2 o'clock and they're both Italian. So they make me coffee have a bit of a chat. And then I leave and to go pick up my kids from school and they stay and do their, you know, they're more afternoon, evening. They work there. So we have a really nice kind of setup that way. It's not large, the space, but it's good.
That's awesome. I love hearing that you have two studios because I think, you know, sometimes it's just too much to like put it all in one spot. And as an artist mom, it's like you kind of need both easy access to your work, but also like some compartmentalization, right? Like, and just having that distance, I think is just really nice. But yeah, like I love that you, you know, just take this journey on the train or however you get there on the subway and get to the studio. And it's like you can kind of put on artist hat for a while, you know, before you put back on your mom hat as you head home.
It made such a difference in my life to have this, yeah, to be able to get out of the house and have a place to go and talk to other people. And yeah. But at the same time, that said, the room that I keep here at the house is important because I do a lot of work from home. Mm-hmm. From when the kids are here, you know, they come home from school. I come down, I do homework, we do, you know, stuff together, then I go back upstairs and I work and finish things.
Yeah.
Last spring at the end of the school year where there was a million different things going on every night that I had to be at, it was easier just to work all day at home and be able to, you know, run. I have that sort of, yeah.
Yeah. You have some flexibility, with the studio.
It means throwing my sewing machine in the back of our really beat up car and driving in the middle of the night into Paris to kind of load things into the studio. Cause it's just too much traffic during the day and the parking expensive. So I do, after the kids go to bed, sometimes we'll drive back and forth between the two, which is a bit crazy, but I'm lucky that I can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that is a challenge because I had a small phase where I had a studio in town and a studio, I mean, like a desk at home, you know, and that was the challenge, was like, which materials are where and what do I need to access right now? And, you know, kind of like remembering and planning ahead for like what you need and that kind of thing can be a challenge for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's for me, it's working.
Yeah, no, that's great. Michelle, like I feel like let's table mom stuff and talk about that a little later, but I kind of want to hear more about like how you sort of built up your career and in the context of this challenge of being, you know, an American, somebody who grew up in the States, and so you're more familiar with like the art world there and like maybe have some connections or at least have some perspective and knowledge that's more rooted in, you know, New York and life in the States. But then you live in France and you kind of made this decision to become an artist after you were already living in France. And so I'm just interested to hear you talk about like how you've made decisions for like who to connect with. And are you trying to like, what's the art world like in France and how has that been, you know, both a challenge for you and a good thing to connect more locally. And then I also know you're represented by a gallery in New Mexico, of all places, the Jen Tuff Gallery, they have some really great programming. So it must feel good to be a part of that gallery. Are they in New Mexico and California?
She's in the process of moving from California to New Mexico.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about just logistically and like, what was your strategy for like building up your work? And do I focus more on the local art scene or do I kind of reach back to who I know and what is available to me with the States? Like, talk to me about that.
I had no idea what I was doing. I still think I don't have any idea. No. I didn't have any context when I made that like sort of grand announcement. I'm going to do this. And then I went, oh gosh, I have no idea how I'm going to do this. So I bought a lot of books. I started listening to podcasts by anything I could hear about how artists start their careers. And then I started applying to exhibitions. And I made mistakes in the beginning. I applied to one that I got in, and then I had to ship my work to the US, and that turned out to be really expensive and complicated. And luckily my mother-in-law was going to the US and she convinced the people at the airport to let her take this giant box on the plane for free. And I don't know how she did that.
Wow.
And then I was like, okay, I'm going to focus on Europe. And then again, it's just been sort of figuring it out as I go along. So mm-hmm. I just started applying to open calls. And why?
Can I back up for 1 second? Yeah. Like, why did you choose that to sort of be the thing? Like, why didn't you say, I want to connect with a local shop that can sell my work, or I want to open an Etsy shop, or I want to, like, what was it about showing your work in exhibitions that is kind of where you went first?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I think it was this, like, I had this notion of what it meant to be an artist, and that was the kind of what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I didn't have the stamina to do an Etsy shop mm-hmm. where you're, you know, I don't know. I had a notion of how much work went into that, and it wasn't the kind of thing that I wanted to do. Yeah. I think I had this idea that I wanted to be in exhibitions and show my work differently. Does that make
yeah.
sense?
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. I just think, yeah. you know, so many people like are kind of at that point where they, or maybe they're always pulled in multiple directions, you know, and how do you kind of decide? Or maybe you don't need to decide and you can just do what feels good. But I think, yeah, I just think there's a lot of taboo and stigma around like what kind of artist you are, quote unquote, and how you decide, you know, what you want to do and be. So I always like to poke holes in that if I can.
I actually, it just seemed like the logical way to go. I think I bought a book that said, it was called something like Show Your Art or does that sound familiar? It was one of those.
Is that an Austin Kleon book?
Yeah.
Show Your Work, I think it's called.
So that's what I thought I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like, okay, the book said to do that. Okay. Yeah. And I Googled and I found there were open calls, and I thought, okay, I'll apply and see what happens. And so I did. And I just started, doing that. And then I one of my first gallery exhibitions was actually with the Procreate Project. I think you interviewed her as well.
Yeah, Diana Gravina. She's awesome.
So I was in a show with her, and I went over to London and met her and Paula and got involved with their project for a bit. And it just things kind of, I realized that as I started doing exhibitions and meeting, that was my way of meeting people as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
And so in the beginning, I was focused on the US because it seemed obvious. And then for me as an American, and then I thought, I can't afford this. It's too complicated. So I started then kind of switched back to Europe, where I thought, okay, this is easier. I looked for exhibitions where they paid to ship your art. I applied, you know, I started to try to be more and more strategic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then thought, okay, maybe if I make smaller works as well, that's a little bit easier to ship. And I just started building, and now, and so that's what I did. I had some work in a small shop here locally, and it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. I think my work is quite conceptual, and maybe it needs a little more context than just putting it in a shop as well.
Yeah.
And it's a bit political. It's a little bit more intense than it doesn't work with just anything. Does that make right. sense?
Yeah. And I think knowing where your work works is, you know, it's just like important knowledge to have. Cause I just feel like that's what some artists struggle with too, is like, they don't realize that the work they're making really belongs, you know, in a different place than they're trying to put it. So I think I that's a really good point. I think that's like important knowledge to consider.
Okay. And then I mean, sometimes I would, in the beginning, I didn't have a lot of work. So I would find an open call that I thought sounded challenging or interesting. And I was actually making work to apply with. Mm. And then would build series out of that sometimes. And then other times it was work that I had already made that I was like, okay, this fits something that this call is asking for. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
How did you find out about calls and opportunities? I mean, are you looking on US websites? Are you looking on French websites? Are you kind of just like looking wherever? Like, what are some of the resources that you've utilized, you know, to build up your exhibition record?
Sure. So I started with, what is that one in the US? The big one, Cafe.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Looking there, and then, pivoted and said, okay, I need to look more in Europe. So then I started looking at some more British centric websites. And then also I had a hard time finding open calls in France, but I've found a few as well. Mm-hmm. And then sort of, you know, I post my work on Instagram. And so then people would, and I would share when I had an exhibition or something, and people then started, sending me open, like, calls. They'd be like, oh, I saw this and it looks like something you would apply to. And so that community that I built there also kind of helped me find things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. 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 That's great that you have, some people willing to do that. Do you have like a pretty good collector base built up, or, you know, are you more, is that something you still are working on? Like, does the work sell like once it's in an exhibition? You know, I think obviously finances are something all of us wonder about, and is another thing that has a taboo topic. So I try to offer, you know, up like a space for people to talk about that too.
Yeah. So I, when I shifted my career, I still, decided to so that I still had income coming in, while I figured things out and am figuring things out. I started teaching. I teach at two universities in Paris, business schools, and I teach there, to help make some extra money. And I actually like it. I really like my students. And then, I'm slowly building up a collector base. I probably need to spend more time nurturing that, I guess is the word, but I don't have so much. I only have so much time in the day.
Right.
I have people that I sell the work through exhibitions, and then also just through Instagram.
Yeah.
People send me messages, lovely messages saying I want to buy this. And so that's what happens.
Michelle, do you feel like your perspective and your role as a mom has changed your work at all? Or like, how does your identity as a mother sort of weave its way into your work?
How does my identity? It's funny. I used to make really, if you look, there's not much on my website. I used to be quite abstract. I did a lot of abstract collages. And, I listened to a lot of podcasts when I'm in the studio and when I travel on the train, and it was a random one. And it was an interview with like these comics, and they were talking about how to be a really good comic, like a stand-up comedian, you have to really talk about your personal life. Mm-hmm. And that when, if you're just up there just telling jokes, you're not really as, like, truly great comics are able to like really dig into like the really tough stuff. And they sort of, and I thought, oh, that's so interesting. And so I spent some time thinking about it, and I was like, okay, well then, you know, the biggest thing in my life probably is, you know, one of the biggest things is being a mom and what that means and my kids and my family. And so I made this series, called Postpartum Reflections. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think it's about depression, but it really wasn't about that for me. It was just sort of that trying to capture that kind of strange moment after you've had a baby, when your body isn't the same. You don't know who you are. You don't know, you know, who your identity is, and you're sort of, you want everything to be perfect, but you can't seem to figure it out. And you're just in this funny transition. I was trying to kind of capture that moment, in that series. And that was the series that really kind of took off. And I had quite a number of exhibitions with it that I felt were significant.
Yeah. And because so, you were kind of combining that personal, you know, like,
And so, I kept sort of, and so it's come up then, that sort of led me into a couple other series, and the work that I'm doing now, which is definitely not abstract anymore. Mm-hmm. Sorry, my daughter just came in, so I'm going to let her.
Hi.
Lucy, no, you, I'm being interviewed. So do you mind hanging out in your bedroom and like being quiet? Thank you, hon.
I definitely love that you had that, you know, moment of like seeing that comic or whatever it was. And
I don't remember what it was, but it was like this, it was a podcast of something, but it was like this, like you go, oh, okay, I can do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what makes really good. If that makes a really great comic or like stand-up comedian comic, then it probably is the same for artists too. You have to get into the really personal things, or at least, you know, try to think about the things that are important to you.
And yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that always, for everybody, that doesn't mean you have like mother figures in your work necessarily or whatever, you know, but I think this, you know, you want to care about what you're producing, you know, and if there's like something, like if you're making work that is inspired by something that you care about, then obviously you're going to show up in the work, you know?
It led me to go to more figurative work. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, abstract, the great abstract painters are doing the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. when you look at, you know, abstract expressionism and stuff, it's, I realized then, oh, well, yeah, obviously they're also, you know, kind of, no?
Yeah, no, yeah, totally. Tell me a little bit more about your life as a mom. Like your kids are all school age now, so you kind of have that, you know, like your time is structured a little bit differently than maybe when your kids were younger. How old are your kids, and like what, you know, what is life like with three kids? I also have three kids, and I think I've said it on the podcast before that three kids is a lot of kids. It makes her a very full life in ways that having only one or two kids did not feel as full. So I'm just curious to get your perspective on that.
Yeah. So I have a daughter who's 12, a son who's 8, and then my other son is 5. Okay. And they're all in school. And actually in France, public school starts at 3. So they have all been in school now for a couple years. Mm. What was your question? Sorry.
just like, you know, life with three kids, does it feel crazy and full, or do you, I don't know, like what's your motherhood journey life right now?
It's crazy, but it's fun. So yeah, they're in school. So I tend to make art while they're in school. I try, mm-hmm. or I'm teaching. And they go to school until 4:30 mm. in the afternoon. But they don't, here in France, there's no school on Wednesdays. So Wednesdays they're home, and we've got a million different activities and things that I have to chauffeur them and drive them all around to.
So instead of like a more evening focused activity life, like, cause I, you know, after school, I feel like is like mom time, right? It's like when all the moms are shuffling all the kids everywhere and doing all the crazy stuff. Is that more a Wednesday, like your Wednesday over there?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it is. My son has activities on two nights a week as well, but otherwise, no, and my daughter does too now that she's older, but there's definitely, Wednesdays are just super hectic. Mm,
yeah. What do you guys do on the weekend? Is your family like, what are you guys into, and how do you spend your weekends?
How do we spend our weekends? Well, I've got three kids, so I'm constantly taking them to like somebody's birthday party or I don't know, my son fences. So a fencing competition was last weekend, and we've got friends over. I'd like to say I spend every weekend at the Louvre and eating fresh baguettes with, but of course I do. Absolutely. No. I'm running to like, cause I forgot to buy the birthday present to like, and then the shop's closed and I've got to wait and running, going to get dry cleaning and shopping and
just life, right?
It's life. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely have this romanticized view of like an American living in Paris. Your life must just be all art and pleasure all of the time. But
absolutely. We never go to the dentist. No, I feel bad. I want to maintain that illusion, but yeah. The truth is no. I mean, you still have to. You still need groceries, and I still like have laundry to do, and we do it together. But yeah, it's occasionally we will go to a museum, or we'll take a weekend away and go see, you know, a castle or something. But otherwise, it's just kind of life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's life. Okay, Michelle, I just have a couple more questions for you as we kind of close out this interview. I'm interested to know, like, I think one thing that artists think about a lot, I mean, everybody thinks about it a lot, but especially artists, is this term success. And so I'm interested to hear what success means for you.
You know, I think I'm in a period where I'm trying to figure that out myself. I thought it was just being able to make art every day was going to be enough, and having, you know, being able to live off of, you know, have an income and be able to do that. But I'm realizing that I'm a little more competitive, and I just am starting to work with the Jen Tuff Gallery. This is a new thing where and I'm figuring this out, where I want to go is, and how I define success. It's interesting how it's kind of evolving at this moment. I had the chance to, I applied to an open call for this pop-up show called The Ladies' Room in San Francisco. And I did it on a whim on like the last minute. I was like, okay, I'll just see what happens. You know, it was being curated by the Jealous Curator.
Yeah.
As well.
I saw that show. I remember I didn't see it that it was an open call, but I saw the exhibition and I was like, oh man, I like want to fly out to California just to go see that show. It looked great.
It was so amazing. You should have.
Went, right?
So I got in and I was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? How am I going to do this? Am I crazy? And my husband was like, no, you're going to go. You're going to do it. And he's like, we have miles. Use my miles. Cause he travels a lot. He flies a lot for work. And so he's like, you're going to use miles. You're going to stay with friends. It's going to be fine. And so I was like, okay, let's do it. And we figured out childcare and I moved my classes. I went to the dean of the school and I was like, can I play? She's like, no problem. We'll cancel the class. I'm like, great.
That's awesome.
And so it just like all lined up and I went out and it was so fun. The other women that were there, we just had the best time. They're so amazing. The other artists. It was great to just, so many of them I knew from Instagram.
Yeah.
And I just got to connect with them in person. And
Danielle was there, right?
She wasn't actually there, but Jen was there from the Jen Tuff. So she was the gallery that was sponsoring it. Okay. And I got to meet Jen.
And is that how Jen, like how you formed that relationship with Jen, or was that already in the works?
No. And that was how we met.
See,
and
apply to open calls, guys. You never know what's going to happen.
And so after the exhibition, she sent me an email. I was like, I'd like to represent you. And
exciting. I bet you were glad you went to the show then.
I'm really glad. No, it was, I'm glad for so many different reasons.
Yeah.
It was great. It was a really good, and I felt crazy that I was doing it, but it worked and it was definitely worth it. So yeah, sometimes you got to take a bit of a risk, I guess.
Yeah, you do. And you have to invest in yourself. Like, you just have to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be the scraps all the time because, I mean, some people are scrappy and some things do come out of the scraps. But I think there's just taking big risks. I think, you know, a lot of times just things happen that you would never have thought of. So, yeah, I'm so glad to hear that.
So that's a new thing that sort of is happening now. And it's exciting. It's really exciting. I'm excited to be on this podcast. I'm excited. Good things are coming.
How has it been like just working with, like having a gallery represent you for the first time? Like, what has that been like? You know, how are you wrapping your mind around like what you need to send them and like what is that sort of the start of that been like for you?
Well, it's really new.
Yeah.
So I'm still getting my head around it.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. No, there's stuff to figure out with what goes where. And I have a galleries that I'm worked with in the past here in Paris as well.
Okay.
And things are, it's just sort of, I've realized that, you know, there was a moment where I was just like applying. And now I actually am not really applying too much anymore. I'm actually now starting to get where I'm being asked, which is really nice. And I'm being invited to do things. I'm no longer hunting down those open calls so much.
That has to feel good.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Michelle, this has been so great just to hear more about your life and your work and your story. I always close with five final questions just for us to get to know you a little better. So can you oblige us and answer, what are you currently reading?
I read a ton. I stopped reading when I had kids. I don't know if this happened. Like, I could not read when I had a baby and babies, and my brain was just mushy, and all I could do is do like look at magazines. And now that they're older, I've rediscovered I love reading. So I have a stack of books to take with me because I'm for the Christmas vacation. Mm-hmm. And what is it, Dutch House?
Oh, yes. Anne Patchett.
Yeah. And so I have that.
Is that Anne Patchett? Yeah.
And then I bought as well, and I've started it, and I'm going to try to finish it over the vacation, is The Ninth Street Women.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Which is another one. And then I was going through our bookshelf looking for a book to read to my son for bedtime. And I found my old copy of The Yellow Wallpaper. And by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. And I was like, oh, you know what? I haven't read that since like university. So yeah, I have a lot that I'm sort of, going in between.
Yeah. The Dutch House is supposed to be really good. That Anne Patchett she lives in Nashville, which is like my closest big city. So she actually owns a little bookstore, and I've read several of her books. She's really wonderful. So you'll have to let me know how that book is, because I want to pick it up.
Okay.
What are you currently watching?
I'm kind of between series right now, but I just finished The Crown.
Oh, the third season?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
I loved the first two seasons. I just did not realize that there were new actors in the third season. And so the first episode just threw me off, and I haven't gone back yet.
Oh, but I love these actors so much.
Yeah, they're good. I need to go back.
I took such a break between I don't even think I watched the second season.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's why. There was like a big break. So it felt like it just feels like a different TV series.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you do if you had a whole weekend to yourself?
I would make art. Actually, and I would just spend the whole time making art probably, and cooking really spicy food, and eat like ordering really spicy food, that the kind of things my kids won't eat, and maybe just making art, eating super spicy food,
doing what you want and eating what you want. Right?
Yeah. How do you, like, I don't know, as a mom, like, there's so many things that I'm just like, oh, they won't eat that.
Yeah. Yep. I get it.
Yeah.
What is your beverage of choice?
Definitely, I run on coffee.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of coffee. I know I probably shouldn't drink so much, but I do.
Okay, Michelle, and in the spirit of community, I always like to close offering up a place for you to give a shout out to someone or a few people who've supported you in your work.
I have to thank the Thrive Art Studio. I joined them 2 years ago, and Tara and Jamie and my current leader, April, it's having that community has radically changed my life. My girlfriends and art friends that support me. Can I list them?
Sure.
Emily Hancock and Leah Beggs and Tori Irvine and Juliet Celine and Eliana Mariani and Jessica Molnar and Veronique Schlotauer and Catherine McCallan. Mm-hmm. Those are all my like art girlfriends that just sort of, that I turn to whenever I need it. And then here locally, I have my just mom friends that, you know, when I tripped over a stroller and broke my foot, they all showed up and put my kids to bed for me. And
oh my gosh.
They will, gosh, so, you know, if you can't get out of bed because you have a stomach bug, they step in and take over. And that's Libby and Lara and Suzanne and Mimosa and Antonio and Anjanette. And and even though they're not artists, I know they'll listen to this.
Yeah, that's so great, Michelle. It sounds like you have some really good, supportive people in your community. I'm really glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Where can people find you? What's your website and Instagram?
My website is michellelandell.com and Instagram is the same, Michelle Landell.
All right. Well, thank you so much for giving me your time and sharing a bit about your life and work as an artist mother. I'm so honored to have you on the Artist Mother podcast.
I'm really honored to be here. Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.